Welcome to a tool-focused episode of Software Gone Wild. Today we'll talk about a toolkit that everyone should have in their organization, and we'll go through individual tools, most of them open source, and how you can use them. With me is Bob McCouch, my co-host for the day. Bob, how are you doing? I haven't heard from you lately, so what's going on?
Yeah, it's been a while, Ivan. I'm doing very well. Going through that special time in every CCIE's life known as recertification.
Hooray.
So that's probably why no one's heard from me in some time.
So how are you doing? Along the plan, falling behind the recertification plan, ahead of it?
Well, I actually went suspended in February, so I guess I'm technically falling behind.
Okay.
But I've got an attempt coming up in a couple of weeks, actually, trying to get it squared away before Cisco Live, so I don't lose all the nice little perks at the conference there. So I'm going down the data center track for the refresh, and so that's slowed me up a little bit because there's much more uptake than just brushing back up on the finer points of OSPF LSAs and
IP multicast, joins,
IP multicast, and all those sorts of things. So, but the data center track is a lot more relevant to my day to day work these days. So, that'd be a good opportunity to force myself to learn a little bit of storage and a lot more UCS.
And recertification is still the written exam, right?
That's correct. So I have to pass the CCIE data center written exam.
Okay. So you did or you will?
No, I will. Hopefully.
Good. That's the attitude. And our guest of the day is well known to the regular listeners of this podcast. Coming from Poland this time is Eliza Jaszynska.
Hi, Ivan.
Hey, how are you doing these days?
Very well. A little bit rainy today here, but not so bad. If you hear a thunderstorm in the background, that must be me.
Or it could be mine. I mean, we have the same weather over here.
All right.
So what are you doing these days?
Other than that, I have no certifications. I'm trying to use open source wherever I can and probably doing exactly the opposite of what you guys do.
Which is?
Which is exactly that.
Okay, good. So whatever we are doing, you're doing exactly the opposite.
Probably.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So I've heard you started a new company not so long ago. How's that
going?
Well,
I've been for a while now contracting. So I've got a couple of things going on. And yeah, bigwaveit.org. I know you want to mention the nice name.
Of course, I love the name. Okay, so today we wanted to focus on the tooly part of whatever the networking engineer should be doing. And I know that you had this great job title, Network Toolsmith at Netflix. And at that time, we were talking about the tools you were using at Netflix. And everyone listening to that could go like, yeah, I understand why they're doing that, but this really doesn't apply to me. So if we focus today on smaller organizations, and they can still be large, I mean, in the networking world, most people are smaller than Netflix. What are the tools that we could use in our smaller networks? What would make sense?
Right. So I guess the difference between smaller organizations and bigger organizations is not actually quite that different. I mean, in all the organizations I have seen from the inside in the past, either they go appliances or they go open source. I guess the philosophies are different on, do I have people available to integrate my open source tools and work on them and maintain them? Or do I want to outsource that to some service company provider, etc. So those are usually the initial questions to ask yourself. If you're a small company, the chances are bigger that you will be looking at something open source. They're cheaper. You'll always find some scripter or coder who can work on integration and doing something around them, which is actually, in my opinion, the kind of the biggest hurdle as companies around their tools grow to figure out how to keep them integrated.
So the first message is you'll pay one way or the other.
Pretty much, yes, exactly. You either pay for headcount or you pay for the service, the software.
Yeah, and the problem I might have with the headcount part of thing is if I'm like a manager of a networking team. And I have all these networking engineers working for me. And now I need to bring in a scripting / programming person. How do I even figure out if he's any good?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
Understand these days you just check to make sure they have a GitHub profile, right?
As long as they do, they're good to go. I was about to say the same thing. Yes. Existing projects, GitHub, open source stuff.
So check what they did, check what they published on GitHub. What if I don't need him full time? What if I just need some adaptations?
Then you call me.
Okay, that's a perfect answer. So let's move on. You sold me on the open source side of things.
I sold you on open source. Well, I guess the other selling point is also it's always going to be better integrated into your environment if you go down the open source route of whatever you already have in your organization. So there's definitely plus points to that. Have we been talking before when we said service providers are cheap? Did you say that? No, maybe not.
No, that wasn't me.
That was not you. So many service providers, I guess, go down the open source route. I've worked for a bunch of them. I've seen a bunch of the setups from the inside. There's a handful of very common tasks that people try to achieve on my list down the line is anything SNMP, graphing related. We want to know what kind of data we have. That goes from SNMP onto flow data, which is a little bit more detailed with information about what our networks carry. We want to do backups of our configurations. And if we're really advanced, we want to auto-configure our networks. And then there's other things like manage IP addresses, IPAMs, etc. I would kind of divide it up into those categories on tools that we have out there.
Great. So let's just start down the list. The first one you mentioned was the monitoring tools, usually using SNMP to gather data and then produce some graphs.
Right. So there's SNMP. There's SNMP for anything traffic throughput related. There's SNMP and there's monitoring. Monitoring, I would call things like Nagios or what else is alerting. Can't think of anything else right now. I guess I've mostly used not just that. Anything that will check for interfaces going down, anything that will check for, you know, BGP sessions going down, the things that you kind of want to be aware of in your network. So I would put that into the SNMP monitoring category. And then we've got SNMP graphing category. I'm thinking Cacti, MRTG, and then the stuff that is the new rage these days, Grafana. Which is a graphing front end, really.
So out of these three, is there any use case where one would be better than the other? Or is just that MRTG was the first generation and then there was Cacti and now the new hot stuff is Grafana?
I pretty much think so, yes. Many people still use MRTG because they have had it for the past 10 years. Whoever started playing the game when Cacti was already out is probably using that. If I would ever have to set anything up again, it would probably be Grafana. The problem, and that's the point where you need the point where you need the scripter around all that is how do you provision, or that I guess that's the question of the size of the company as well. If you have two routers, you set it up once and then your two routers are in the system and you have your data. If you're a big company, if you're expanding rapidly, you're pretty much busy adding devices every day, every week, then you need some tooling around how to add that quickly, how to make changes, how to reinitialize new devices, etc.
Now, I just got a crazy idea. Assuming you really believe in network automation and will get there, and you use an Ansible playbook as a single source of truth, can't you just use that to create MRTG or Cacti configuration file?
You could absolutely do that, yes. MRTG, really easy to template. Basically, the configuration is a text file that you can regenerate very easily. So, yes. And one more time, yes.
How easy is it to get started with some of these tools? It's been some years since I've set up MRTG. I have not, Grafana is new to me. I have not heard of that one before. But, you know, one of the things I run into, particularly in the small and kind of mid-market, is that, you know, these tools need to be very, very simple for somebody to get started with, right? A lot of smaller businesses actually, you know, can't go out and hire somebody to be doing full-time, you know, open source development or even full-time network monitoring with, you know, with pre-built packages. You know, they need something that's very easy to stand up and they can get something useful out of without spending 3 months tuning and tweaking and modifying thresholds. Or, you know, are these sorts of tools, are they getting to the point where they're kind of ready to go for everyone to deploy, or is there still, you know, I remember, again, you know, at least a few years ago, the last time I looked, you know, something like Nagios was usually a lot of work to get going and get it actually, you know, tuned in. I mean, is that changing with some of these open source tools?
I think it's getting a little bit easier. Things like Grafana are not that difficult to set up anymore. They provide much more flexibility, I would say, in the front end portion. So you don't rely that much on back end text files to look at. But then if it depends on where you come from, right? If you come from the front end side of things and rather have an interface to configure, and if that's easier for you, you're probably happier with Cacti Grafana. If you're the, you know, Perl geek from the 90s, you're probably still fine with MRTG because everything is based on text files and you're great with that. So I guess it depends on the audience, but they're definitely making leaps of changes in how those things are set up and worked around.
Yeah, and even MRTG had some really simple setup tools the last time I used it, where you would just point it at a device and it would read the interface list from the device and spit out the config file. So you mentioned these three graphing tools, and then you just briefly mentioned Nagios, which is, if I understand correctly, like an alerting tool, right?
Alerting, exactly. I forgot what the other one was. There was something else that kind of went with Nagios that people use. There's a number of them. So with Nagios, my problem has been to feed it with data, because MRTG is still MRTG Cacti, SNMP-based graphing, is still kind of easy because the only thing it really needs is all your interfaces and then pulling those interfaces, and that's where it kind of ends. Nagios depends on what you want to monitor, what you want to feed it with. So it will get the interfaces easily, but as soon as you want to go into things like monitor your BGP sessions, or it will need some additional information just to see the things that you want to look at and the things you don't want to look at.
So can't you use syslog messages to feed Nagios?
Probably. Well, to feed it with up-down messages, yes. To feed it with the information which BGP sessions it should be alerting on and which ones it shouldn't, or which one it should include in the first place. Because, you know, you might just have different types of interfaces. Some of it are going to your customers and some are backbones and some are peers or transits or whatever. And they might just have different levels of importance or exceptions to you for how to configure them.
Ah, so you're saying if you want to know that a BGP session is down, syslog might be good enough. But if you only want to know if your upstream BGP sessions are down, then you better use SNMP because it would be more specific.
Well, you would still be using it. It still doesn't really matter where you get the data input from. I guess my point is that you always need to feed it with additional information regarding your organization or your services around. You know, it's not as simple as point it at a router and then it will tell you when something is wrong, because it won't unless it knows what things are important to your services or your organization that you want to be alerted about.
Ah, so in the end, it's digging through the SNMP MIPS trying to find the right variable.
Or parsing things or naming them somehow usefully that, you know, alert on this and don't alert on that, etc. Because you kind of want to find a balance in everything alerting. You want to find a balance between not too much noise and not being informed about things that are important.
Yeah, your alternative, of course, is to do what I see all too many companies do, which is alert on everything. And then every time you log into the tool, you've got 35,000 unacknowledged alerts.
And then it doesn't make any sense to use it in the first place.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of monitoring and alerting, any recommendations for a good syslog collector?
Text files.
Okay.
Text files, grep. Well, I guess what people do these days is everything that is a log message type of thing. I think the new rage is to go through logstash and then type it into things like Splunk. Is that right? I think Splunk makes blobs out of log messages that are all kinds of like searchable and dividable, etc. I think it's actually quite nice.
Yeah, I've also heard about people using Elasticsearch and pump syslog data into Elasticsearch and then doing whatever with that.
Right, I guess similar thing.
Yeah, I think what they call the ELK stack, right? Elasticsearch, Logstash, and Kibana is the front end, I think, is becoming kind of the popular open source alternative to Splunk, because you know Splunk is fantastic and it's free for kind of playing around with and meager use, but as soon as you cross that threshold into a pay tier, it gets extraordinarily expensive very quickly. So I know several of my customers, kind of had gotten started with that, and once they kind of reached a pay tier in terms of Splunk usage, they just could not justify it. And several of them have gone on to, play with Greylog or some of the others, and several of them have settled on ELK, Elasticsearch, Logstash, and Kibana, and found that to be a pretty good open source, all open source stand-in for what Splunk can do in terms of analytics on log data.
Nice. So if we move forward to the next category Elisa mentioned, the flow tools, these are, I guess, the things where you would want to know not just what the interface utilization is, but also what goes over that interface.
Right. So flow tools is kind of the next thing as soon as you want to dig deeper into your traffic information. Then let's see, what do you have on that? So you mentioned ELK, Bob. That's kind of getting ahead of where I wanted to get in the first place too. So I've been using PM account or PMHTT. Everyone keeps making fun of that name.
Well, it's Paolo's fault.
Yeah, hi Paolo. So PM account, the same way as you would do with log, it came out of log files, but the same way you would do with log files, you can integrate PM account with ELK. So you would end up with PM account data changed or filled in, replaced with additional information you need through Logstash into Elasticsearch, where it's in JSON kind of formatted data backend, and then graph it through Kibana, where Kibana did not quite have all the features yet we really look at from like a traffic perspective, because you can, when you use it, you can clearly see that it comes out of log file integration, and it's so easy to look for things like, when text file kind of based information. But I don't know, as soon as we wanted to, I forgot the example, but we wanted to look at something, bits per, packets per or something, that it just, you couldn't slice it that way. So you definitely see where it's coming from. But I think those are all features that are coming out in newer versions right now. So this is the new hotness in flow tools and flow data for me is Kibana right now.
PMHTT is netflow/sflow collector, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes. So Paolo Lucente wrote that. That's an open source collector that works pretty much with every version of netflow, sflow, ipfix, and everything that is around.
And then it would already process and slice and dice the data and maybe augment it with things like information about BGP prefixes, right?
So you would have to set up PM account in a way that it can slice and dice everything the way you need it. It provides hooks into, for example, BGP if you're looking to annotate your data with ASPath or any other BGP information. PM account does that out of the box, and then it aggregates your data. The main point really is aggregation for information that you're looking for. So by particular AS numbers or by particular prefixes to just cut down on the amount of data that you would have out of NetFlow natively.
So instead of dumping all NetFlow data into the ELK stack, you would use PMHGT as a filter slash aggregator, right?
Exactly, exactly.
And by the way, I've been speaking with someone who used nprobe from Luca Derry, from the ntop-ng guy, to collect the NetFlow data and then dump that straight into the ELK stack because nprobe also supports JSON export.
Okay, cool.
But then, of course, you get the full NetFlow feed into the Elasticsearch, which may be too much.
Right, okay. So they don't do any aggregation or anything?
No. Looks like they don't. I mean, I still have to talk with him.
Oh, okay.
Any other flow collection tools?
I've used NFSend before. That's kind of the open source version of, you know, save everything. It saves everything as well. So it doesn't do aggregation, and it doesn't have the BGP feed option SPM account does. So that's the, if you want to look into BGP data, that's not going to help.
So I was going to crack a joke here about how, you know, all the stuff is irrelevant in the new world of OpenFlow and overlays, but it actually brings up an interesting point, which is, you know, certainly in probably many service provider environments and many traditional network environments, a lot of these tools that have been around for a while that operate on common protocols, right? NetFlow and or SFlow and SNMP and those sorts of things work very well. But as businesses start coalescing around newer models in data centers, now whether that's OpenFlow or whether that's overlays of some sort, VXLAN and things of the sort, you know, do these Is there any sort of movement on how these tools integrate with some of those new technologies? And I'm particularly thinking of things like overlays, right? I mean, think about monitoring interfaces in SNMP. An interface may not necessarily be down, but if there's something wrong with, you know, VXLAN traffic going over top of it, there may be network impact that is still considered part of the network because it's an overlay, and yet it's not dependent on an actual physical interface being in an up or down state. Do either of you have any insight on how that sort of thing is being monitored outside of the specific fabric management products around, you know, certainly if I'm using, Big Switch, you know, Big Cloud Fabric as my network underlay, that gives me, you know, some visibility into that through their interface and APIs and that sort of thing. But in a broader sense, are any of these tools starting to come around to being able to look into those newer designs and topologies that we're seeing come in data centers?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I've already had that problem in the past with MPLS and SFlow sampling, that it wasn't able to quite distinguish if something was on an LSP or outside of it or where it really went. So we've already had that problem in the past. And yeah, no.
Well, so there are two aspects to this discussion. The first one is visibility once you deploy overlays. And there you just move the monitoring points to the hypervisors. VMware NSX has NetFlow, Open vSwitch has SFlow, Nuage is using Open vSwitch, so you can probably get some SFlow data out of that as well. So you use the traditional tools, you just move the collecting points to the virtual switches.
Right, and then you need some complicated mechanism to figure out, okay, I'm going to count all the NetFlow from those interfaces except for this, plus everything that is coming off my VMs, and okay.
No, not really, because if you do all the monitoring on the virtual switches, this is your new network edge. It's exactly the same problem you had before. You see every flow twice on the egress and on the ingress switch. You just have to be consistent. If you collect things on the virtual and on the physical switches and add them together, yeah, you get a mixed jam.
Exactly. Consistency, I guess that's the point. Consistency, yeah. And templating really is kind of the point to setting everything up.
No, and I know that Brett Hedlund did some work, and of course he was using the log insight or something, or whatever, vRealize something. which is the VMware's NetFlow Collector. But he was collecting both the virtual and the physical data and comparing them. So he would start with a virtual flow, and he would have VXLAN data out of that, and then he could dig into the physical flow and see how that was doing across the switches or something along those lines.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's probably a matter of making sure you're not double counting from a standpoint of counting the application, both, you know, inbound and outbound, but also counting the encapsulation protocol that's carrying it from the physical switch as well, right?
Yeah. And I was trying to figure out for one of my customers how you would do end-to-end monitoring of the physical fabric to solve exactly that problem. So I'm running over this physical fabric, but is it really performing? Can I do any active probing from the edges to see whether the core is performing? And I haven't found a good solution.
Let us know when you do.
Arista has something, so on the top of rack switches, they would send VXLAN packets or something along those lines to other top of rack switches. So if there would be a problem in the core of the fabric, they might be able to catch that. But obviously, if the problem would be on the server to top of rack switch link, they couldn't catch that because they are only doing switch-to-switch monitoring.
Okay.
So I think it's an unsolved problem.
Oh, well, it's good to hear there's still a few problems out there to be solved.
Oh, yeah,
still have
only
some work
a few.
To do.
But here's your startup idea. You just have to make it sexy so that you get the VC money. Anyway, moving down the list, the next thing you mentioned were configuration management tools. So what are people using there?
So configuration backups or, management. Do you want to read it or do you want to write it, I guess, is my first question. Because reading is simple, and reading is always something I've been kind of using as a database later for various inputs. So I guess one of the things that just comes up in networks over and over again is you back up your configurations with Rancid, and then you somehow parse through those configurations, parse out bits and pieces you then need for other monitoring or interface stats or whatever, you know, define what are your edge interfaces from NetFlow, et cetera, et cetera. You need that data from somewhere, and having a data-driven network is unfortunately not really the case in many organizations yet. So config backups is kind of the 1990s version of getting that input. So there's Rancid. Everyone still kind of uses that. I've had problems with it in the past. I've recently learned about Oxidized, which is a successor to that. I haven't tried that out yet, but that seems like that's going on too. I don't know what, there's a couple of other more commercialized tools for something like that. Vendor kind of tools out there that do config backups, I guess, per system, but multi-vendor, I don't know what else you could do.
So let's say Rancid is the baseline. Have you seen anyone using that and then feeding that into something like Subversion or Git for version control?
Yeah, so Rancid comes out of the box, I think, with, I said 1990s, right? I think it comes with what does it come with? RCS? No, CVS?
Oh my, yeah, it's 90s, yeah.
Yes. I think it does Subversion in like, or it has some patch that does Subversion. So yes, exactly. That's pretty much what you do. And then it pulls the router every hour or so, and you have a track record of all the changes that happened on the device. I personally, it can email out as well. I kind of like it. I kind of like that because I do changes. I provision something. I get back, make tea, and an hour later I get an email that shows me this is the change you made, and I can review it one more time. But it depends on the size of the network, really. If you get 500 emails per day with changes, it doesn't make that much sense anymore.
Then I would say you're doing something wrong.
Or that.
You do have to be a little bit careful what kind of data you pull with some of those tools, though. I remember several years ago I called into a customer who was experiencing some performance issues on some 6500s, and after a few hours of digging around, we noticed that the CPU was spiking on them about every 30 minutes on a very periodic basis. We were trying to figure out what was happening on a 30-minute interval. You know what? And you start going through mentally the list OSPF. Of things that happened on 30. Yeah, LSA refreshes, things like that. No, it wasn't. They weren't running an OSPF. And finally, you know, I said, well, let me look back at some of your configuration issues. They said, oh, we'll pull it up. We keep it all in Rancid. I go, well, how often do you pull things with Rancid? Oh, every 30 minutes. Every 30 minutes, Rancid was connecting and doing a show tech on these 6500s.
Oh.
And pegging the CPU for, you know, a minute or two. Every 30 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So the commands, you kind of want to sanitize the commands you run, and especially if you have boxes like that, yeah.
Yeah, you still have to be kind of, you know, reasonable about what you're trying to gather.
Yeah, don't do show tech on a box that had Z80 CPU.
That's a good start.
But I guess one of the original ideas of this is your box is gone and something happens and you need to replace it or replace portions of it or it died or something, and you just have a complete backup of your entire configuration at that point, and you just paste it back, insert the passwords that it cut out of pulling it, and then, you know, your thing is back. That was, I guess, the original idea, but then it serves as a data backend, unfortunately, way too often.
You said that Rancid is, you know, the remain of the 1990s. And as I listen to what you're describing people doing with it, it looks to me that, yeah, it's for the traditional box huggers that want to log into boxes and make manual changes to the boxes. And what if you are in the brave
box huggers?
Well, we have server huggers, we have free huggers, now we have box huggers.
Okay. I love it. Great.
But what if you want to be in the, you know, hip new world of NetOps and things like that, and you auto-generate all the configs and you deploy them automatically and you crash your network automatically? So what tool would you use then?
Well, if you auto-generate your configurations, you don't need backups of it anymore, right?
Of course not.
I would actually go that way probably. If it's all data driven and all generated out of templates, you know, I would probably back up my template input, but not the output anymore.
So you would keep like the, let's say, Ansible playbook and version control system, but you don't care about the configuration files anymore.
Well, you can check in the configurations once they're generated, right? You could. I would probably, if I would set this up from scratch again, I would probably check in my YAML files into Git and then probably the resulting configurations as well before they're pushed.
And templates, obviously.
And, well, yeah, the templates, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so assuming you are starting from scratch and they tell you you can use whatever tool you wish, we don't care how you set things up, do the best you can, what tools would you use?
For which purpose?
Oh, well, you know, from A to Z.
From A to Z. Well, let's talk about Ansible then.
Oh, yeah, because I said A to Z, right?
I'm starting at A.
Okay.
How much time do we have? No, let's talk about Ansible, because that has recently become my favorite tool. And if I would set it up again, whatever it is, from scratch, I would probably try to automate it with Ansible out of the box before we get to the point. Well, you know, automate the tool setup, the monitoring setup, the configuration setup, preferably as well for the devices, because then it's all kind of done offline, and I would probably go down that route.
So out of all the configuration automation tools, you would use Ansible?
Yes, I would.
And then there is this slight problem of integrating the Ansible with the physical devices. So yes, building templates is cool, generating configuration files is cool, but you need to push them to the devices somehow. So how do you do that?
Right. I guess we've talked about this recently.
This was a nice lead-in.
This was a nice lead-in to a side project that I've been working on. Where to start? So starting kind of out of this, exactly this question, you generate your templates, you have your templates, how do you get them to a device? If you have a Juniper-only network, you're happy, and then you have Ansible modules that can talk to your devices and you can upload your configurations and everything is fine. If you don't have a Juniper network, then you can hack something together with SSH, I guess, out of Ansible, or use something that is not related to Ansible to upload your configurations. I ran into this problem, and then my friend David and I, David at Spotify, have been working on an open source tool that integrates different vendors into one library, into one like abstraction layer library that can talk to various network devices and upload configurations directly out of Ansible. We recently did a podcast on that, so we can probably reference that in the description here. And it's called Napalm. It's a network automation, stands for Network Automation and Programmability Abstraction Layer with multi-vendor support, and is available on GitHub. We're working on that right now.
We'll include the link in the show notes. And by the way, you got the name by saying we want this to be Napalm and let's see what it means, right?
No. We got this name by we're working on a network automation and programmability abstraction layer with multi-vendor support. How are we going to name this?
Yeah, sure. I totally believe you.
Yeah. No, David came up with it, actually. I told him I'm going to blame him for it eventually.
Any other tools you would use in this category?
Any other tools? Well, I would use, or I have seen, is kind of the question. I have seen Infoblox has something that does configuration management and pushing. I guess it all depends on the vendor, really. Juniper has great tools in their own toolbox. If you're only looking at Juniper stuff, PyEZ and anything they really have around their automation is pretty nice. And then I think you also have a kind of another podcast coming up on the subject, TLF. TLF now Cisco. So I haven't quite kept up with what happened ever since TLF became Cisco. But when I looked at it before they were Cisco, it looked pretty rad.
Yeah, well, we did two podcasts actually on their NCS, which is network control system or something.
Yes, I think so.
And yeah, the engineers at NIL were really happy with what NCS can do. So you could see from the podcast that they were enthusiastic. Anything else that you think I should put into my toolbox?
So I have a question for Bob. So before we started, you said that you have not used many of those tools that we put on a list here before. What do you use?
So that's an interesting question, right? So I work for a value-added reseller, which means, you know, I install a lot of networks and don't operate too many of them myself.
All right.
And so I'm usually kind of at the whim of what the customers are running. And all too often what the customers are running is not a whole lot. Or maybe if we're lucky, they're running, you know, SolarWinds Orion for some of these functions, but they're usually not maintaining it very well. I'll be honest, I've started to come around to the belief that for some of this really the monitoring, particularly things like the SNMP and that sort of thing, that's a really ripe opportunity for smaller organizations to look at, outsourcing to essentially a SaaS solution of some sort. Because I think the realities of trying to maintain a network monitoring system for small and mid-sized businesses that are chronically understaffed and, you know, can barely keep their network going in some cases, let alone optimizing it and doing preventative stuff. You know, I think that moving to a SaaS model just makes a lot more sense, you know, for some of them. But for those that do run things themselves, you know, I tend to see some of the commercial tools out there, right? SolarWinds is a popular one. I see for logging either Kiwi Syslog, which is SolarWinds, I do see the Elk Stack from time to time. I've got a couple customers that do run Nagios, but they are usually sort of the shops that are a little bit more open source oriented, or their software shops that are used to programming their own tools. So it's a real mishmash at the, you know, sort of the smaller end of the market, I find. And all too often, there's just not a lot of visibility into the network.
Too sad, really too sad. Speaking of SaaS, so for flow data, there is the SaaS solution coming up, Cloud Helix, I believe it's called. But, you know, the question is, how comfortable are you with sending your data across the internet to someone else?
Yeah, and that I think that's a question that everybody has to answer for themselves. One of the things that I've been doing this week, not really related to network management so much, is studying up on a couple of the cloud-managed wireless providers, right? Cloud managed wireless vendors, the Meraki's, NarrowHive's, and some of those. And, you know, we've seen with some of the new SD-WAN solutions that are also sort of cloud managed, you know, it's becoming pretty popular for those tools that have a SaaS component or a cloud managed component to be doing layer 7 traffic analysis. And everybody's got to decide whether they're concerned about what can be gleaned from that flow data and whether they trust the provider. Right? It all comes down to whether you trust your provider and the controls that they place on the data. It's not usually a question of, you know, is it well encrypted when it gets to them? It's once they have it, who has access to it, and are you comfortable with that, and how well do they control it?
And what if something goes wrong and someone steals their entire data?
Right. So you have to decide for yourself, I think, what, you know, how much value your flow data has. And I'm sure for some organizations, it's incredibly valuable from an IP standpoint, and some others just may not be that worried about it. And it depends on your application, I think, as well. But that's an issue, I think, that's definitely coming to the forefront because we're seeing more of these cloud managed solutions and you know, XaaS type services.
So what would your customers use for like SaaS based network management?
Well, actually, the company that I work for over here in the US, HA Storage Systems, has a sister company called HA Services, and we are in fact HA Services is in fact a managed service provider who does that sort of thing. Now, I think they use a CA platform actually because they kind of operate in a managed services situation. So, you know, that's not a particularly Web 2.0 sort of solution, but that is what a lot of our customers end up using. But I think there are a number of cloud-based or SaaS providers that do some of that, right? We've talked to a few of them over the years, I think. Some of that monitoring and stuff can be done through 1000eyes and some of those other providers as well. I remember for a little while, Splunk had at least a trial going on for essentially cloud-based Splunk access, where you send everything into their cloud. I remember doing a trial with that. I don't know whether that service is still going or not.
I know there was some startup doing cloud-based syslog collection and analysis. And they were on one of the cloudcast.net episodes, and I can't remember the name or what episode it is, but, you know, Googling around will probably give you the name. By the way, is anyone doing something like NetFlow collection? Oh, you mentioned that.
Cloud Helix one. I haven't really looked at the back end they have, but I've heard rumors that it's quite nice. I think they're coming out with it soon. I don't think they're quite operational yet, but sometime around now.
Okay. Anything else worth mentioning?
Well, I guess there's IPAM stuff that people use. I have not personally done that a lot, but as soon as you get into, you know, you need to manage your IP addresses somehow, you have IPAMs. I know that SixConnect is doing a couple of has IPAM, but also other solutions in like there, but that's an appliance again.
Excel,
yeah, that's pretty much that's pretty much it. I briefly looked at the Dyn, so I personally use Dyn, and then I've looked at the Dyn API, which seems really nice. So it looks like you actually can build a really easy solution that just takes things out of wherever you keep it in and automates it towards Dyn. I think that looked quite cool.
Nice. So let's wrap it up here. You both have to run to other meetings. Elisa, where can people find you, and what are you planning to do the next weeks?
People can find me on bigwaveit.org. What I'm planning to do the next weeks is go on vacation, I hope. It's sailing season is coming up, so I'll be hopefully on a boat as much as I can.
Me jealous.
And then we'll see what comes after that. But yeah, wrapping this up, I think tools are there plenty. Integration and management, I guess, is usually the problem around all this. And, you know, we're getting more and more APIs, which is definitely making things easier, but you still need someone who works those APIs around all that. So there's a lot of opportunity.
And because I know you won't say it, I will. If anyone needs someone, Elisa is available.
When I'm not on a boat.
Of course. And are you willing to skip a boat trip if something exciting comes along, or is it like non-negotiable?
That depends on how exciting it is.
Okay. And Bob, what are you doing these days? How can people find you?
Well, you can always find me on Twitter. I'm at Bob McCouch. And my blog is herdingpackets.net. I've been a little sparse with the blog content lately, due largely to the aforementioned CCIE research process. So that's one of the things I've got on my plate. And I think in the next couple of weeks, I've got a BGP WAN data center design exercise going on. I think I've got another ECS install coming up. And actually, just in these next 2 weeks, I'm diving deep into enterprise wireless and getting ready for a customer workshop that I'm putting on where we talk about some of these cloud-managed and also on-prem managed wireless network solutions to help customers figure out what's best for them. So a lot going on and, working with lots of different technologies all over the place. Good stuff.
That sounds awesome. So will that workshop be available outside of, the closed circle of your company and your customers?
One thing we have not been able to do yet is figure out how to effectively make those kind of like a webinar, but that is actually on my to-do list. I'd love to be able to make those more openly available. So I will probably get the slide deck up there, on SlideShare or something at some point. But unfortunately, at the moment, it's mostly limited to our customers and good friends there. But hopefully that'll change in the future and we'll make those available for people in the public for general consumption.
Oh, by the way, speaking of herding packets, one of Elisa's previous job titles was senior packet herder, right?
I was about to comment on that. Indeed, I might need an email address at your domain.
we could probably arrange that.
Elisa at herdingpackets.net. Yeah, sounds awesome. Okay, so thank you both for being with me today, and I hope to get you back for some future podcast.
I'm almost feeling like a regular by now. Thank you.
Oh, you are a regular.
Thanks for having me.
And if you just stumbled upon this podcast, you've been listening to Software Gone Wild, and you can find more episodes at podcast.ipspace.net. And if you want to know more about SDN, go to sdn.ipspace.net, where you'll find all things SDN-ish, including webinars, podcasts, books, free presentations, videos, literally dozens of hours of content. If you like the podcast, don't forget to go to iTunes, leave a review, and then go to podcast.ibspace.net and subscribe to the RSS feed so that you'll get the new episodes automatically in whatever software you're using for podcasts.